Hello and welcome to episode 309 of the Modern Audio Drama Indie Voice Acting Podcast with me, Sarah Golding. Hello. This day on this mortal coil of coolness, we chat all things doing spontaneous creation, making things up as we go along, ad-libbing, playing by ear, extemporising, impromptu verbal wordplay, sounds and witticisms, sons, criticisms. Yes, it's all things working on an improvised fiction podcast of grooviness with the folks from Civilised. Amazing. Okay, today, do your own lap drum roll, please. I have the most exciting, wonderful guests you could ever possibly imagine. it's Sean Howard and Hello. The most beautiful Christy Bolton.
Hello!
I should have said most beautiful Sean Howard as well.
I was about to say, wow, what accolades.
No, I'm nowhere near as beautiful as Christy.
Oh, hush, you got a haircut, you're fine.
Lockdown haircut. So today, the main focus is looking at how on earth you create your wonderful and beautifully realised improvised podcast called Civilised Pod. If folks who haven't heard it should first slap themselves, not condoning violence, but, you know, it's up to you how gentle that slap is, for not listening. And I don't know if either of you can fill in what they're missing out on so far.
Do you want to take that, Sean?
Sure. You can fill in what I miss.
I will, for sure.
Civilized, yeah, so Civilized is a dark comedy where everything that can go wrong goes wrong. And we're just wrapping up season two. I don't want to give any spoilers away. It is entirely improvised, but you really can't tell. It's fully immersive sound design, like all of our other shows, like Alba Salix and et cetera. Yes. We basically have two seasons out. We also have a backstory that's interactive that you can play. So you can do a like 20-some-odd episode backstory if you sign up with your email address on our site. And I think that's about it. We've started to bring on some amazing comedy guests. That's been really a lot of fun.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're just starting to work on season three.
Superb. Now, how on earth can we prove that it's completely improvised? What? Where's the proof?
Well, we have a couple behind-the-scenes videos where you can, like, watch us stagger through an episode.
Exciting.
But I don't really know. I mean, blind faith, I guess.
Because it's so good. If you haven't listened,
you must.
The characters are just blissful to listen to. And the scenarios can be, as you say, dark. You know, there's mudslinging and all sorts of craziness that happens.
There's a love story too.
I guess. Yeah. See, we all need more romance, right? I think there needs to be even more romance though. So put more in. More happy love for everyone.
Okay.
and yeah, a myriad of wonderful guest characters as well come in and enhance the grooviness of the show too. So let's just peel these layers back for a second. So obviously you've all had various experience of improvisation in your professional lives from what I've gathered from having a look around at what you do other than this show. So for anyone wanting to start this kind of thing, other than them getting involved in an improvisation group themselves, how on earth would they start with a show like this? How do you start? Where did this show idea come from?
Christy?
Well, it's funny. I was fortunate enough to meet Sean a few years ago when we were doing improv at the Staircase Theatre in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, for those who are listening internationally.
Hooray.
And I started listening to this podcast that he was telling me about that he did called Alba Salix and started listening to it. It was just like the most beautiful thing. Yeah, Alba's amazing. So is End of Time and, you know, all the other Axe and Crown, all the other things
everything.
They've ever touched, him and his partner Eli.
It's like Midas touch with these folks.
Aww, thank you.
So I remember listening to these shows and being like, gosh, I want to do something like this. But I'm a theater girl, so I always loved scripted things and everything. But when I discovered improv about 6 or 7 years ago, I was like, oh, this is my heart song. This is all I've ever been looking for in my life.
Yeah.
And because of that, I thought, well, improv might be a good way to do a podcast. And I knew Sean was thinking about it. So I came forth with an idea for a show called Civilized. But it was completely different. I pitched them this show about a plucky crew of Neanderthals who were going to have each season would potentially be them going into a different timeline, so it would be them reincarnating and like trying to find memories. And
we were on the train when Christy was pitching me this idea. We were on the train going into Toronto, which is like an hour long thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And Christy starts pitching me this idea because we were probably going into Bad Dog or some kind of improv in the city.
Cool.
And Christy's pitching me this idea, and I had been trying to think of something I could do that wasn't scripted because all of our other shows we all know it's hard getting all the writing done and all that,
for sure.
And and I fell in love with it, and we just started brainstorming it on the train.
Yeah, trapped, nowhere to go. But you're in the carriage,
nowhere
you can't
to go.
Move.
I couldn't get away. It was a good pitch.
Good work.
I was like, okay, so listen, I've got this idea. But Sean pointed out there were a couple problematic things with the idea, and so we sat down. He also told me that our friend Mike Davinsky, who is Bartholomew, was sort of like playing around with his. I'm sorry, you're right, Barty Bartholomew. Depends on your closeness level.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'll say this: Beatrix starts calling him Barty. Wink.
Whoa.
Don't worry, it's not actually a spoiler. Sort of. Sean's gonna kill me. But, what ends up happening is we all decided to meet around a table in Sean's home studio / like think room / board game academy. And we started putting down cards about our ideas for a podcast. And do you want to take it from there, Sean?
Yeah, we just basically started brainstorming, coming up with different angles, ideas. We settled on a few key concepts pretty quickly. But what we were trying to do was trying to figure out, how do you design a show that can be improvised?
Right.
And that's a real battle with something like Civilized. So to answer your earlier question, I think you do have to go out and take some improv courses if you want to do an improv show.
Yeah.
But then B, it's not as easy as just standing around some microphones.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we do that when we go on stage, but there's a bit more leeway. We got a bit more leeway because if we go on stage one night, it's a whole new story that night. It doesn't have to pick up where last week left off. So we spent a lot of time trying to think about the mechanics of how do you world build without knowing what the plot is. And how do you come down with what are these characters and what is the conflict in a season that we think is there?
Yes. Yes.
But most of our arguments are about how much we should plan as a cast.
Super.
Yeah, it's true. Sean and I have a lot of loving fights.
That's a beautiful way of putting it.
Couples quarrels, if you will.
Creative couples.
So as far as the season is concerned, you worked out what key points in the arc you wanted to hit and key character traits you wanted to bring out? Or what kind of planning went into
question.
This?
I think what we had to do more was less about what was the arc of the season. And we spent a lot more time, well, even going into season 3, we spent a lot more time trying to figure out what's happened prior.
Yeah.
So launching this, we spent a lot of time trying to figure out how did these guys end up crash landing on a planet and being so incompetent. So we needed to know some idea about the world. And then going into, I don't remember season 2, but going into season 3, which we're doing now, we're spending a lot of time trying to go, okay, what we call them offers. What outstanding offers have we made to our audience in seasons 1 and 2 that we haven't delivered on, right? We haven't closed the thread.
Right.
So it's a lot of time thinking about, okay, what have we set up? Because one of the keys of improv is to not just keep throwing out more and more random funny ideas. Uh-huh. It's trying to keep a story going.
Yeah.
So you can often end up with too many untied loose ends.
Right.
So every season, we seem to spend most of our time trying to literally write down and capture what's outstanding. What do we think now we want to, which of these, just having them in our head now makes it a little more likely that we're going to build a story out of them. So we don't really plan the season. We don't have beats. We're not a show, like there's another show that I will not name. They stole all our thunder because they have a big name celebrity. But they basically do the classic Hollywood improv, which is they just plan out all these beats and then they say to everyone, go.
Okay.
We don't do that.
Okay.
We're basically in the room creating it together and finding the story.
Exciting.
And Yeah, I think something that's worth mentioning is that sometimes ideas don't work. And I mean, the longer you work with a group of people, the less likely that is to happen. But what's nice about audio fiction is that maybe once or twice we've looked at each other after an episode and gone, yeah, that was okay, but maybe we could punch that up, and then gone back and maybe like re-improvised a small scene.
Yeah. Yep. Just to hone it.
Like I said, that's only happened once or twice, but that's the beauty of the audio fiction part of improv, is that you still want it to have the authenticity of an improv production with long form, but when you don't put those beats in front of you either, you don't feel the same pressure and expectancy to have to hit them. So the story becomes that much more organic and that much more, feels real, because it's real for you in the moment as well, just as much as it is for the audience. It's their first time as much as it is yours.
Yeah, genuine behaviors. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Christy, how much work did you do like out of that rehearsal room in regards to sort of development of the wonderful character Beatrix?
Well, when we started, we all sat together and talked about who we wanted our characters to be. Mm-hmm. And so we wrote down their values, their name, their values, the title of their job, and who they aspired sort of to be. Ooh. And in doing that, it was really, really helpful, because when you're doing an improv show regularly, especially short form, you don't have the luxury of going out and being like, all right, this is my character. She's from, you know, if her name was like Clarice and, you know, she's a detective and now she's going in. I don't know. I have watched Hannibal recently or Silence of the Lambs. But with Beatrix, it was so lovely because I took her away from our initial planning session and I tried out a few voices, and that's where the voice acting element comes in.
Yes,
because
the fun
because there's so many little nuances and character things that you can discover. Like I remember the first time Beatrix growled at somebody and I was just like, ooh, okay, this is fun. This is something she does now because she's so bright and quirky, but now when she gets mad, she's horrifying. It is nice because with improv, you do, like you said a minute ago, you get those genuine reactions that come out and you're like, oh, okay, I guess that's part of who I am now. But yes, you also get this beautiful sort of option to start thinking about your characters in a really complex, beautiful way.
Yes.
That you start to be able to explore and arc and discover. And so when Beatrix and Bartholomew started to have their flirtation, neither Michael or I saw that coming.
Right. Brilliant. Yeah.
But that's the beauty of developing character work, right?
Yes. It's like it's a 100-piece puzzle and then you suddenly realize there's another side and you turn over like, oh, what's this new one?
I found another corner? Where did this come from?
Having worked with Christy quite a bit now, I can say we should always expect a flirtation.
It's true. It's true. My characters are always falling in love.
Nobody expects a... No, that doesn't work.
A flirty inquisition?
That'll do. Hooray!
Flirty inquisition!
Well, that's very exciting. I think all of the kind of component parts that make up these characters that suddenly over, you know, a next sort of 15 minutes or whatever of improvising something or other that start to build into something else, you know, really jump out of the audio beautifully in this season, I do feel. And how about you, Sean? I mean, with regards to Bob and the fun.
Bob Bobaram.
Yeah, how, because obviously also, I must say, it's possibly a slightly different for you, is it, in as much as you've got the actor's hat, but also the producer's head on, heads and hats.
Yeah, so I have less acting experience than Christy. So for me, Bob, I mean, Bob's a bit of playing the straight man. He's just really stupid.
Bless him.
And that was fun to play with because in improv, we're often told, don't play the stupid.
Okay.
It's a first reaction you often have to find or make something funny.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a really well-gelled cast or group to allow for someone to do that.
Yeah.
Because it means that they have to play into it. Like they have to almost give me opportunities knowing I'm going to go there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a lot of fun to play with Bob. And then to the whole, I won't give it away, but the whole shift that happens in Bob was sort of fun to find.
Yeah. You know, it is.
What happens when he snaps.
Bob.
Thank you.
It's very exciting. And I found myself getting slightly gently aroused. But I'll cut that out.
What part of Bob slightly gently aroused you?
Well, I'll tell you later. I'm actually audibly blushing.
I love it.
But yeah, that's the exciting thing, isn't it? That with the improvisation, that you own it as the voice actor. You know, it's not someone else's written word or arc or carefully planned something or other. You personally get to play with it. And I do love most of the work, actually 100% of the work I do is currently not improvised. But really the time that I do like is when producers have said, oh, sorry, you know, you can let fly on that last take and just see what happens. And I find that is really liberating, and I feel more folks should invite that of their voice actors to give you that chance, as I say, when you know those characters well enough to add your little something onto the top of or end of or underneath of whichever part that might enhance the character. So yeah, I'm very excited to fathom what happens next to these wonderful people. I mean, with your processes, you say like you can't remember season two, so maybe this is a defunct question, but like from season one and season two, did you make any changes in how you worked as a team?
Yes.
Yeah. Let me know what happened. What did you hone?
I think, I mean, first of all, we were trying something that had never been done, really, that I know of, the way we were doing it. Uh-huh. I mean, I don't want to say that big of a statement. Like, it's in this medium, doing this completely improvised the way we were trying to do it, and sound design and whatever, was just something that we hadn't really tried before, and it was relatively new. So we learned a lot, right? Like, there was a lot of things we had to learn just by doing it and finding out where the problems were in season one. And so I think, like, each season we sort of do this. We often call it the plan, and we say, let's start planning the next season. And it basically just becomes a 2-hour-long debrief. Because there's so much we're learning, and there's so much that we're trying to keep track of. So, and then, of course, we had an additional thing with COVID. We decided to keep creating. Uh-huh. You know, I'm alone in the space normally all of us would be now. And I've got someone under a blanket. I've got Christy shoved in a closet. I have Michael under a mattress.
And that's just for personal amusement. They could have just done it anyway.
Yeah, that's not even the voiceover stuff.
Nothing to do with the show, actually.
Weird request that Sean makes as head producer.
Number 77.
Yeah, Christy, yes. I really just need you to be in a closet, stooped over and hunched to get that effect that we want of, you know, being claustrophobic in the base.
But did it work?
Oh, it always works.
It did work. So I think we learned the importance of, it's really important that we be able to work with each other. So that was, so the chemistry of the players is even more important.
Yeah.
Normally, like in an audio fiction, we'd be just worrying about the voice and the performance.
Sure.
And what we sort of learned was actually the chemistry, you know, our ability to be paying more attention and care more about the other player is sort of what makes it possible.
Yeah.
Like, we're sitting in the session, and if Christy's doing a thing, Michael, myself, and the whole cast, Phil. So Michael, Phil, and myself will just be so focused on Christy. Uh-huh. Every nuance she's giving. What does she need for support here? Where is she trying to go emotionally so we can play off that?
And what makes that so nice, too, is when you have that chemistry and that trust with your teammates, it's like a verbal trust fall. You know they're going to catch you. And that's what makes the risks worth it. Because I find that with scripted audio, like what Sean was saying, there are some really beautiful ways that you can get deep and emotionally invested in these characters. Even in comedy, like there's so many nuances and fun and so much fun you can find within the lines and between the spaces of the lines. But with improv, the risk feels heavy in a good way because it challenges you to not have a story that's just surface level and funny, and it challenges you to actually make bold choices. So
yeah.
there's a bonus episode where there's a secret revealed about Bob that he reveals to Bartholomew, and it's during the point in the mid second season where Beatrix is still trying to regain her memory, and both Bob mm-hmm. and Bartholomew are working so hard to help her. And I left for a minute thinking that the scene was over, and then I watched as Sean and Mike sort of improv sparred with each other, and then all of a sudden this big secret came out, because that's a really lovely thing in improv, is that when you feel like you might be starting to talk into a corner, you reveal a personal secret. And Sean reveals this big secret that was so lovely and so powerful that you watched as Mike was left stunned as Bartholomew, but it was so authentic and so real. And Bob just, you know, storms off. And in that moment, as an improviser, I'm just watching and I'm like, wow. But also as a storyteller, I was like, wow, my good. That was such a powerful move and so real. And when you trust each other, you trust that you can make those choices and that we're going to support you. And I think that's just so special because it is your choice as the character.
Yeah. Yeah. Exciting. I mean, could you talk us through a typical current season session?
So sure.
How would you start? Yep. You got together and...
Yeah. So we basically... Our final episodes are 12 to 15 minutes long. Mm-hmm. We will basically record about, it ends up being about 17 or 18 minutes.
Okay.
That then becomes the 12 or 15. So we do edit it down a little.
Mm.
Or again, if we have a problem and we back up, which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Generally because of me, I will take something and everyone, yes. Chrissy will be like, okay, so that could, did anybody else interpret that this way? And everyone will be like, yes. And we'll just, I'll back up and I'll take the line again. So it's, yeah, it's good. But anyway, so what happens is we'll get together here. We come up to the third floor. We basically just chat briefly. Then we'll start warm-ups. We'll usually be recording the warm-ups.
Groovy. Are those vocal warm-ups or like complete improvisation
warm-ups?
No, totally
vocal warm-ups.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
We used to do improv warm-ups. Mm-hmm. We don't do that anymore. Now we just do vocal warm-ups.
Okay. Oh, give us a couple of your favorites then. Favorite warm-ups. What some things would you fling in there?
All I want is a proper cup of coffee from a proper cup of coffee pot.
Oh, I can never do that one.
Or I slit the sheet I slit, and on the slitted sheet I sit.
Yes, good work.
We do the brrrr and all those. We have to massage our faces. Christy just wants to massage her face and makes
your
us all do
your own faces.
Good.
Yes.
There's a part of your jaw that you never actually touch, and then you have to be really conscious of it. It feels so good to relieve the pressure.
Answers on a postcard as to where you think that your place is.
Wink.
It's not on her jaw. Okay.
And Sean, can we just take that back for a second? Some people might interpret that a little bit weirdly.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I could see how that would be misinterpreted. And it's at the back of her neck.
Her head neck. Good.
So... that's basically how our sessions go. So then what'll happen is we will usually do a thing where there's a long pause. And someone will go, does anyone remember what happened last episode? And usually Christy will raise her hand going, ooh, 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 I remember. And she will take us through what she remembers. We'll all then remember different things. Because in improv, we're so in the moment and so intensely focused, we often don't remember what we just did. So we'll then sort of recall where we left off. And then we ask for a title. We use friends' titles.
Groovy.
The one where.
I love that,
like
yes.
The one where the monkey stole the whatever. Or the one where Bob tries to install something. Or the one where they run out of eggs. Someone will just come up with a title. And then we all just look at each other and someone gets an idea for how to start and they'll start without saying anything. So what's really fun about it is we don't know where they are when they start. They, you know, Beatrix might just start humming to herself. Like, here, go ahead. Do your classic open, Beatrix.
Oh, my classic open is just...
And now what's going to happen now is
hi,
one
Bob.
Of us is trying to... Oh, hey, sorry. I was just coming over to, you know, your room and I wanted to give you this book.
Oh, I mean, that's okay. Well, thank you. I mean, knock next time in case I'm touching that place on my jaw, but you know.
I really don't want to know about that. Okay, so but basically, so what happened is when Beatrix is humming, it's a sign to one of us to be like, where are we? So we're either going to, someone's going to introduce that they're outside or et cetera. And that's how it starts. And then we know all in our head it's the one where X.
Yeah.
We often don't start there, right? Because we're all storytellers.
No.
So if it's the one where Bob installs something, the last place we're going to start is with Bob installing something,
right,
more than likely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it starts. And then we'll record for about 17, 18 minutes. We have little hand gestures we use, which is literally like a chopping motion. And usually we're grinning like maniacs.
Because we're like, oh, I have an idea.
Sometimes we're doing it. Sometimes we're doing it over and over until people finish the scene. But it basically, like, we're trying to cut the scene visually so that we can say we want to start a scene in a new location. So I might see Christy making a chopping motion. And I'll step back from the mic and then she'll start a scene somewhere. She might look at someone to let them know, hey, you're in the scene with me. Because she has an idea for the next scene. And that's how we do it. Every once in a while, one of us will use a thing to Eli, who's in the room. We'll be like, oh, Eli, there'll be a sound of a chainsaw here.
Okay.
if it's something. We're trying to get out of the habit of making the sounds with our voices.
Sorry.
So does Eli produce that instantly? Or like, is that just a marker made?
No.
A note made?
Just mark.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
Yeah, he would make a note. He's in the room.
Yeah.
Hooray for Eli.
Crying.
Yeah.
Do you want to just say to folks
crying
about Eli and the amazingness of McElveen?
So with Eli too, and I'll let Sean speak to this because he knows far more about it than I do, but when you're doing a show like this, you need an audio producer who is going to bring it to life. Because improv itself is wonderful and it's like so fun to do, but what Eli does is he takes our stories and adds the magic.
Yeah. Yep.
100%.
His productions are insane. Like all the work he does on Unwell and like all of Alba and like all these other shows. It's just, he's just phenomenal at what he does.
I do the dialogue edit, actually.
You do. You do a great dialogue edit. You know exactly what to cut out and what's not going to be necessary.
That's tough.
It's so
That's
good.
Tough, actually, doing that because, you know, killing your darlings, your babies, whatever you want to perhaps call them, and also being in the show, that must be terribly difficult because I bet you're tougher on yourself.
It's actually not, I am. It's actually not that bad. So what I don't do a full dialogue. What I do is I do a first pass dialogue edit. So I just, if we recorded something out of order, which has happened a couple times, we'll be like, oh, you know, this has been great, but we need a scene that opens in the kitchen to set this up or something like that. So I'll just roughly structure it. I'll cut out any retakes. I'll just trim out us dying laughing at some point. And I'll usually try and pick a couple options for the post-credit where you get to hear us live off the mics, which is something fans requested. So I'll try and pull
fans
a snippet to put at the end. But I haven't done a finished edit, right? Because I'm in the show and I'll often go to Eli and be like, I don't know. I think it drags a little. And he might edit it a little more. Or sometimes just him adding the sound and us stepping away from it. We sort of rely on Eli to be like, this is a good episode. Don't worry.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And how long does that process take typically? So from you've recorded it, it's sort of 20 minutes of your time, and then you chill. Do you then go straight onto the next episode?
Yeah.
And you record the,
so
what,
we'll
the
generally
whole
record,
season?
Oh, no.
We'll record about three, generally, three episodes.
I was going to say,
we also,
like,
but we I did leave something out. We do start with what we call, because we don't do improv warm-ups, you know, like any of those weird games anymore. But what we do is record bonus episodes. We try and do short little 5-minute things.
Yeah.
Sometimes those end up becoming a full episode.
Wow.
But, you know, on our Patreon, you can go and listen to the Bob and Beatrix episodes, which is basically just Bob and Beatrix go out and get killed horribly.
But it's funny.
So we try and record a couple.
The funny killing.
It's funny deaths because you know they come back.
Funny killing.
So
it's probably a couple hours. Everyone's here. Then we go eat, hang out a little. As far as how long it takes to get to final, in real time, it takes a number of weeks. In reality, Eli turns it around in about 3 days, but usually procrastinates doing it for a long time because he has a lot of other things on the go.
And that's a creative mind for you, right?
For sure. Hooray. Yeah. Hooray for creative minds everywhere. And yeah, do jump on their Patreon, by the way. I'll put the links to all that in show notes for this episode. Go and have a browse and enjoy yourselves. There's, sounds like there's a crazy amount of cool stuff there.
We just released a bonus episode about Bob and Beatrix going to find a chicken, and the sound editing on it is the most ridiculous thing.
It is pretty funny.
Because, of course, there's no chickens on this planet, but Sean and Eli have created this insane animal. It's so fun.
Amazing. I'm very intrigued and excited. brilliant. So yeah, and is there anything you wanted to add about the process there, Christy, about what is it like being in that environment? Do you feel pressure, or is it something you thrive on?
Oh, well, that's the nice thing about it being improv, is that the pressure is on, but with audio fiction, it's so great because if you produce crap, you can redo it again. I don't think we've ever had to redo a whole episode. We've never, you know, pitched it that poorly, because we all do. We've sought out training and continually, once Civilized started, we started looking for classes, especially Sean and I, that we could take that would heighten our abilities on mic and, you know, help us get into those deeper storytelling roots. But I find that when we're there, what's different with COVID and what's hard about it, but also works, is that there's no audio bleed, which is great. But you don't have the same personal feeling. So I'm glad that it works the way it does, because we have made it work, and it's been some really good episodes because we can see each other on a Zoom call, and you know, otherwise it's pretty good. But we're lucky we did it for a year before COVID, because we can still pull on that emotional energy we have from each other. This would be really hard to jump into right now if you'd never improvised with a crew before.
Yeah, this is the thing. It is very different times currently, isn't it? And but once we can all get together,
then
seems like a good model.
Yeah, you feel that. It comes down to a spark of joy.
For sparks of joy.
Yeah, you feel that in the room so deeply. When something really cool happens and, like, you've said something, you just feel each other kind of come on fire. You're like, oh my God, yes, I got an idea. And you're just like hands in the, you're like wild-eyed, like, no, this is so good. Okay, I know where it's going. But yeah, Sean, did I cut you off? You were saying something?
No, that's it. Like, Christy was the first improviser that I had thought of that I wanted to work with before she even pitched me on an idea. And she's amazing. And we did a session once where she was so ill, she couldn't get out of her chair barely. And she spent half the session lying on the ground. And you can't tell. As soon as her moment would come up, Beatrix would just return to the mic. She's a trooper.
Super proud.
Thank you. That was pneumonia. Yeah. I forgot about that.
Oh, no.
And then Michael, for about half of season two, had COVID.
Yeah, and continued to.
Oh, no. Yeah. Goodness
me. Well, he was remote, but still, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for saying lovely things.
Bless. and with that, I mean, I can cite that whole, you talk about the spark. And I think, I go back to a drama lesson. We have GCSE drama. Before then, it must have been like year seven. So my first year of what's called secondary school here. And I remember being in that circle and we were just doing the improvisation thing where you think of an idea and the scene freezes and then you tap the shoulder and take the place of the person. And
yeah.
I remember sitting here thinking, oh, this is the best thing. I'm so excited because my brain was firing on all cylinders as far as like who I could be and what I could do. And it just made me the most excited person ever in the world. And I can just honestly think and feel that feeling. And I feel that now about even creating new voices for characters and making new folks, you know, it sort of comes from that absolute excitement of where's this going to go next, and reveling in the fact that whatever comes out your mouth, you've just thought of. And I think that's very exciting.
It is. Like,
I think it's one of the greatest things of improv, I think, is even if you don't take enough improv that you want to go up and do improv, it's that idea of committing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That idea that's saying, you know what? I'm going to go for this, and it's a funny voice. I'm just going to make it. Yeah. I think that's just an amazing thing that can come from any improv you do.
I think just speaking to that, too, what improv does for you as a person is so powerful, because it starts to teach you that one, failure is totally fine. Like, if you fail, everyone around you is going to embrace you, because it's not only is it a learning experience, but it teaches you so much more than just constantly being successful at it, because there is no really, like, success gauge in improv. I mean, you crave the laugh or like the emotional response, but sometimes, you know, when you don't get that, it doesn't mean that what you've done isn't good. It just means that, you know, you're on a path to digging to something better. And the beautiful thing with improv too is that it builds your confidence in yourself in such a visceral, measurable way. Like, even on days when you think, oh, I don't know if it was that good, it reminds you that this is one thing that's lived for a second, and that you've done a million other wonderful things that also lived for a second, and you don't have to measure that by this one thing. Like, it's gone now, it's gone forever, and that you at least committed, you were confident in what you did, then you can say that and walk away proudly.
For sure. There must be some amazing chemical dopamine reactions or something for improvising, because I must say I feel like I am an intrinsically shy person, which lots of people have disagreed with me, but I this is how I feel that I am, and through doing drama and especially through voice work, I've really enjoyed that freedom to create and just, as you say, live in those moments, and that to me is what it is all about, for sure.
Well, I mean, I was just going to say, you look at your incredible list of projects, like, you have to have some improv, like, built into your system and brain in order to come up with all these people.
Possibly.
Like, you've been on over, what, 40 shows? This is insane.
It's over 100.
Over 100.
Oh, my God. We Fix Space Junk, you were, like, 12 people. You were 12 like, people on We Fix Space Junk. I don't know how you did that.
That was so fun. And, well, yeah, no, I love it. I love that. That's the thing. I think I've kind of banged this drum on this podcast that, you know, I'm me, but can happily try and invent toddlers and old crones and rabbits and fire-breathing dragons and, you know, whatever else, which, you know, in a live theatre setting, there's no way I would be potentially believable. So that's why I love it, that freedom to play and just inhabit. And as I've spoken to other folks before, I don't know if you do this when you're improvising too, but you kind of have this holodeck of a kind of zzz around you, and you're imagining the space you're in and what your friend that you're talking to or whoever you're reacting to looks like and what they're doing and how they're doing it, and the space of the place as well. Even though right now I'm under my audio duvet of happiness and joy, I am beyond that in realms, you know. Potentially we're like, we're interviewing now, in my mind, it's like the upside down dark space, right? We're on our little spotlights in our mics talking to each other because my brain just goes to that visual kind of thing that it puts me in those places, which I again, that whole creativity, that's my entertainment. Who needs telly when you have imagination, right?
Oh, no, that's why I love podcasts, is just for that, is that I love that you called it the holodeck. Like, that's such a perfect image. But it's almost, I don't know, even when I'm on stage with improv, when you get into a really good scene, you stop seeing the audience and the stage that you're on, and you start to see, like, in my mind, it's kind of like shimmers of where things are, and you start to almost, you know, you can picture where the countertop is if you're in the kitchen with someone and you've gone to open a cupboard and you pull out that glass. That glass doesn't actually exist, but it's there. It's like Robin Williams in Hook when they're about to eat and they're like, you know, having a food fight and he doesn't see the food, but suddenly, because he believes, he sees the food.
Yes.
That to me is improv.
This is the thing.
And it's funny because doing improv in audio, when we're on stage in front of an audience, I don't know about Christy, it can be hard to completely transform who we are. It can be hard to become a dragon because you're like,
I'm very aware of my tiny body.
Yes, where are my forearms?
You know, you're like, do I just shuffle around? You know what I mean? Like, it can be hard. Yeah, without just saying, ho, I'm a dragon. Like, but in audio, it is really fun to think about, as when we start improvising, we can become anything, right? Like, Christy becomes a helmet for, you know, a beloved helmet. And we all picture her differently, but we all picture her as this helmet. Yeah. And And that's like this amazing thing that I think can happen in audio that I think would be a little harder for us to do on a live stage in front of an audience.
Right. Yeah, that's it. And the diverse places audio can take you to with the sound or a word or a click or a song or a humming. It just is beautiful.
And we know we have Eli, and we know Eli is also going to transform our voices if we do something really big or really small.
Mm. Yeah, it's a magician for sure. I mean, let's flip that on the other side. Is there anything that if someone was going to do this kind of exciting adventure that they should not do? What things would you say? No. Stop. Desist. Cease.
Well,
don't limit yourself.
Yeah.
I would say don't limit yourself by what you think is a good idea.
Uh-huh.
You know? Like, don't say to yourself, I don't know, this has been done before. Like, still try it. I mean, if you do a couple rounds of something and it's not working, that's okay. You haven't, you know, spent 8 months coming up with a script. You
yes.
can try something new. Yes. So don't let yourself get wrapped up in one idea having to be perfection right away, because the whole thing with improv is that it is imperfect because it is fleeting and it is
of the moment.
To be enjoyed in the moment. And even though with audio fiction it's out there, it's about that genuine vulnerability that you're putting out in the moment. That's why people love it. So don't be afraid to let go of what you perceive to be the thing that you should be doing. There is no should.
I would hesitate to do the Hollywood approach to improv,
okay.
Which is let's write out these beats and they're really detailed, and there's a writer with a vision, and then you just get these actors in the room. You just tell them, now go hit your beats. And I've yet to experience even some of the big movies that made a lot of splashes with this technique. I've yet to experience one that I really enjoyed.
Okay.
So I guess I'd flip it the other way, though. I'm not saying you can't do that, but I think what you should do is go out and listen to some shows that are improvised and see the breadth of what's possible. Because
yep.
I'll bet you, there like Chrissy's saying, there are things we haven't even thought of yet. You know, we have 20-sided stories doing some really fun things.
Yeah.
You know, we have... You know, we've got Civilized. We've got others that are also using improv out there and are really exploring. You know, like improvised Star Trek is one of the big ones.
Yes. It's doing superbly well, isn't it? Mm, mm.
Yeah. So I think there's a whole... I'd say go out and get a sampling. Start to sample each of these different things that are out there and then go, oh, okay, that's interesting. And then let your idea go.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd say, a bit of an antithesis of that and a little bit... I hope it doesn't come off as like a negative Nancy. But don't think that improv is the easy route.
Right. No.
You know, just because you don't have to prep scripts and you don't have to, quote unquote, practice in the same way or have table reads and things like that. The thing with improv is that improv can be really, really good. But if you are doing it with a crew of people who don't have any improv training and don't know how to build the stories and like accept offers and know the basics of improv, it's going to fall apart really quickly. So if this is something you're passionate about, go out and take a couple improv courses.
Yes.
Like, you don't have to be the world's best improviser. You don't have to be the guys on Whose Line Is It Anyway. You don't have to be, you know, Middleditch and Schwartz. You can just start playing with your friends, especially if you're like someone who does roll top. If you do like role playing through Dungeons and Dragons or something like that, you have some improv experience. Just my advice would be, educate yourself a little bit and you'll be much better for it, because improv is not easy. There's a misconception about that.
Some of the worst, being in front of an audience and bombing in improv, there's nothing worse. Been there.
Oh, yeah. It's
done that.
Truly horrifying. And
it's horrifying.
Feel like you're going to throw up. Like your body has not only are they looking at you as a failure, and it's usually not this bad, but internally you're like, oh, look, now I'm naked. I'm not only naked, all of my skin is gone and you can see all of my insides here for your delights of torture. Like, it's just... It can be very scary, but improv at its core is a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful thing and a great resource that I don't think a lot of people ever consider to be a truly impactful art form when it really is.
It also, you already cut on this area. You don't have to take improv training just for improv. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it's an amazing resource for actors
Absolutely.
You know, like to learn how you can in one hour session you can play 12 different characters and have to find different walks and body yes. movements and voices, and it's a great way to learn confidence yes. in making strong choices.
Yeah.
It's the yeah. best way I've found to learn how to listen. Ooh. You know, like truly mm-hmm. listen. Like we all talk about, I'm not an actor per se, but I know a lot of actors talk about this idea where they're on a set or they're doing something and they're not getting mm-hmm. anything from who mm-hmm. they're playing with. But that idea of listening is that idea of paying attention, right? To what is that energy?
Gosh,
what,
yes.
how do I connect with this other player?
Even more so over remote acting. It's crazy. I was talking to this about this just this week, that all of the things you're doing as an actor, obviously with the script mostly, so you're reading that and you're being that and maybe having to transpose your accent and your pitch and your pace to something very different to yours, as well as monitoring your levels. But that listening over, you know, what might not be the yep. best connection, possibly a bit of delay and still yep. trying to give the best sort of reaction, mm-hmm. acting thing that you possibly can. Yes, it's so key to be a very good listener, I do think, for this kind of audio acting, for sure.
Yeah, totally agree.
And I will just say quickly, too, I mean, as a voice actor who does this, you know, as a side hustle / semi-professionally, the thing that I've heard from all of my voice acting coaches has been that now is more than ever a time to get some improv on your resume as okay. a voice actor, because casting directors everywhere want to know that you can add some spice to your reads. So if they want to know more than anything, like they can hear from a past director, but especially if you're just starting out, they're going to be like, well, how do I know that they're going to be able to give me multiple reads?
Yeah.
And when they see improv experience on your resume, that settles a bit of like a question in them, and they'll be more likely to put you forward for an in-person or a second or third audition
yeah.
because they know you can play.
Yeah. Play. Oh, that's such a good word. I mean, I was lucky enough. I went on purpose, exactly the reasons why you say. I went on a sketch writing course, but also that had improvisation mm-hmm. within it, with the amazingly talented Gemma Arrowsmith, who's a variety of characters on a lot
oh,
of
yes.
different things, including one of my faves, Ooh. Victoriosity. And
beautiful.
And on the BBC, she does countless cool things. And essentially...
No. Victoriosity is cool.
Yeah.
BBC, that's done. That's over.
Yeah, King BBC's all right, isn't it? Yeah. But Indie, yeah, no, Victoriosity is a flaming beacon of awesome.
I love the Sugdens.
For sure. Works.
And Gemma is amazing on it.
Yeah, and I did go and see those things live as well, but as a side. And just going along to these courses and just really enjoying being the student again, because I'm a teacher as well as, you know, I teach Lambda acting to kids of secondary age currently to make some money, right?
Preach.
Remember money? We vaguely remember.
I've never known what money is. I'm a starving actor.
Hooray for actors everywhere, just doing it. But yeah, I learned so much, and I got so many things so beautifully wrong and revelled in those moments where, you know, yeah. it's just about having a go, isn't it? And I really learned a lot. And so there are Hoopla courses in London area. I'm not sure elsewhere, but it's closest to me. Look them up. They do lots of all the different cool styles of improvisation types you can imagine are happening. Even now online, I know Gemma has got this course actually online now, so go look it up. In fact, I'll link it in the show notes. But we are in Ontario, both of you. Are there any things you recommend for sources and courses for people to look
Absolutely.
At for inspiration?
Yeah, I think we would recommend Bad Dog if mm-hmm. you're in the Toronto area. Mm-hmm. There's also a really good outfit. There's a bunch of them. What's his name from Whose Line Is It Anyways? Where
Colin
does he
Mockery?
Show up?
So Ryan Stiles.
Colin Mockery somewhere here
How
in Ontario.
How dare you say what's his name? Who do you think you are?
I saw him. I watched him on Whose Line Is It Anyway many, many years ago when I was like a teenager, and I shouted at Paul Merton.
Yeah.
And
Ooh!
And Upright yep. Citizens Brigade is another one to look at. The problem is most of these outfits right now are losing their spaces in their theaters,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of them are keeping their online tools, their online training.
Okay.
Yeah. I met Colin Mockery. I took an improv class with him, and we had this like really beautiful moment where we hugged and cried, and it was really special, and I love him. He's just like the best. He's just such a cool person. But
amazing.
I would also recommend Second City for their sketch writing and things like that. They are a really good resource, but especially just for resume. If you're in the Toronto area, I actually would recommend Bad Dog over Second City for your improv. But the other thing I would recommend is, again, if you're in the Toronto area, but she's doing it internationally now as well, Ellie Rae Hennessy is an outstanding voice acting coach. She is just unbelievable. She's been on a ton of productions, and she's currently on like My Little Pony, and she's look her up on IMDb. Her her backlog of animation and video games is unbelievable.
Awesome.
And she produces monthly open mics for voice actors, and now they're on Zoom with other people in the industry like Ivan Sherry, who's in the Far Cry series in Assassin's Creed, or Ellen Dubin, and all these folks who are video game and animation, but it does give you that extra push. I think it's like $50 Canadian. Mm-hmm. It's a really, really good resource. And you can reach out to her assistant at Colin at Ellie Rae Hennessy or something like that. I'll put it in the show notes if you want it.
Do you want to give your affiliate codes? You can make some money here.
That's not what I'm doing. I'm saying that I've had training from Ellie, and she's been in the business for so long that I recommend her to everybody because she's a kook, but in the best way. Like, she's absolutely, you know, insane, but she's the best. And she drives you in a way that, like, it really pushed me to be a better voice actor.
Amazing. That's the best way to be described, as a kook. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
So final top tips, folks, for actors who are like, I don't know. What would you say is the best thing about doing what you do, improvising these wonderful characters?
Well, my tip is for producers.
Okay, I'll allow that.
So, you know, Alba Salix takes us 9 months to get a season ready to get into studio.
Amazing. And it's worth every minute.
Civilized. Yeah, Civilized, I can produce. I think we produced from idea to actual episodes, like a whole season in the can, was under 3 months.
Wow.
Like,
brilliant.
It's unbelievable if you can nail the format and nail it. Yeah. There's nothing like it for momentum that I've found.
I'd agree with
Superb.
That. My advice from an acting perspective, just do it. If you've been thinking about it, please just do it. You don't have to publish it if you don't feel 100% about it, but it also doesn't have to be your first show, or it can be, you know, you can have as many iterations as you want. Just do it, and one day you will strike gold, and you will feel good about it, and you will want to put it out. And had you never taken that first leap, you wouldn't have produced something magical.
Absolutely.
Like, if Sean and I hadn't gone beyond that conversation on the train, Civilized wouldn't be here. Like, we were an honoree on the Webbies this year. Like, we were in our first year.
Yes, that was so good to see your names there. Yes.
Like, that was incredible, alongside so many other amazing projects. And it was just, you know, and...
Yes, yay, indeed.
Now we're on the Fable and Folly Network, and, you know, we've met just incredible people. And because of Civilized, I just did, both Sean and I just did a guest spot on an upcoming Mars Fall miniseries. Like, had we not taken this jump, had I not taken this, you know, leap to try something, just to try something.
Yeah.
I mean, I never would be talking to you today. So just do it. Just try it. What do you have to lose?
Yeah, superb. I agree wholeheartedly. Jump in. All your feet, however
play.
Many you have. Yes, play, spark, find your duvet of happiness of choice, and just get going.
Yeah.
No, I'm really excited to have spoken to you both today. So thank you for sharing your grooviness and your experience. And I'm sure that as a result of this, there might well be some other folks jumping on the bandwagon to enjoy themselves, hopefully, perhaps even half as much as you.
That would be amazing.
Yes, just do the Shia LaBeouf. Just do it!
Do it! Yes, amazing. So, yeah, we'll continue to be just fortuitously, excitingly, amazingly wondrous, both of you. And kudos to the rest of your team, too. Do say hi. And it's been very, very cool to fathom how on earth it works. So, folks, if you want to jump on and haven't heard it, I'll put links on the show notes. But, oh, goodness, you're in for a beauteous ride. So yes, and yes, enjoy yourselves. Have the best fun creating some wonderful stories. Make this world a better place by being just stupendous.
Your positivity is just wonderful.
Thank you so much, Sarah.
Well, I love my life. I've only got one. I'm gonna make the most of it. Try and make as much of it as happy as possible, right? So yes, we'll enjoy, and thank you so much for joining us on Medieval today.
Thank you so much. This has been what a joy to actually get to talk to you.